Welcome to Podcasts, recorded live at the Center for Spiritual Living in Portland, Oregon. We have many programs, classes, and workshops developed just for our online audience. To find out more, go to our website at cslportland.org and look under the Online tab. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its video podcast, you can donate online at cslportland.org/donate. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are on your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living.
That video is for me. It gets me centered and present. It connects me with all of you, with the whole reason that we all gather together. And any anxiety that I had before, despite seeing the evaluation forms, all of that's gone now. The nervousness is gone because I feel that heart coherence is what it's called. And I know that if it's happening to me, it's somehow settled into everyone here. Heart coherence. Can you feel that?
Yes.
That's so essential. Recent studies have shown that heart coherence, as it resonates in individuals, among teams and communities, it leads to greater performance and effectiveness. This is particularly good news for all of us that use the creative process, because if we want to be more effective, let's start at that place of heart coherence. Now, it's not expected that scientists have just discovered this, something that Ernest Holmes proclaimed last century when he said, "Everything in life responds to the song of the heart." So the question is, what is your heart song? Love, peace, wisdom. And you can just search on YouTube for those three words if you want to see that video again. So what is your heart song? Is it a playlist of songs that keeps you on track for your purpose? Or it ignites some passion in you? Because that's what it's all about, is being able to energize the start of your day by telling yourself something good. That's the key. And I know it doesn't seem like much, but there it is, a choice point to pull the covers over our head or to pray. And you might say, you know, there's so much stuff happening every day in our lives, so many opportunities, and you might say, well, I don't know how on any particular day or what to pray for. And it can be confusing. Reverend Kath and I were at the CSL conference convention a couple of weeks ago, and we came home and found that our 15-year-old cat had to be put down. And, you know, I have never been a big fan of cats, but then I realized that I've had a cat in my life for 40 years. So there's some incongruity there. And it's amazing how such a little beast can cause such heaviness of heart. And recently, a friend of ours and Nadine's friend lost a pet that they had for 15 years, Winston. And just yesterday, a close friend of mine, Reverend Bobby Becker, had to put down her beloved pet of 15 years. And so we have these opportunities to sit in that and say, what do I do with all of this? So Mary Oliver wrote a book, and it's called Dog Songs. And in that book, she has conversations with her pets and writes poems about them. And one of the conversations, the dog was just so impressed and said, well, how do you pray? And the answer was this: every time you wake up and love your life and the world, you are praying. Every time you wake up and love your life and the world, you are praying. Meister Eckhart, the monk, said that the only prayer you need is to say thank you and that is enough. And so when we are in the question of doubt and uncertainty and all this stuff happening, can we move to that place of gratitude and appreciation? What might happen if you started every day in deep appreciation for whatever opportunities might come before you? What might happen if you fully embraced the thought that no one and nothing is against you? No one and nothing is against you. No matter what appears before you, no one and nothing is against you. It sounds simple, right? Well, I'm here to tell you it's the hardest thing I've ever tried to do. Why? Because of our beliefs, our experience, our culture, more often than not, just overwhelms us with all that stuff. And I can only speak for myself. The political divisiveness before the pandemic, layered on top of all the stuff that happened in the pandemic, registered a shock across the entire human experience, a collective dark night of the soul from which I can only speak for myself that I'm still recovering from. And that shock is calling us to change many things, but essentially how we are with each other, how we are to be with each other. This is more complicated than it may sound, even in our philosophy. We've been taught in this teaching that I am first cause to my experience, yes?
Yes.
Okay. The homeless person is first cause to their experience, yes?
Yes.
Well, no doubt there is personal responsibility there, but I'd like to suggest that we need to take this as a teaching to go deeper into first cause, that we are all first cause to the entirety of the human experience. We all have culpability for everything that is happening in the world. Because when I refuse to acknowledge a wait person or a cashier or a homeless person, I am consciously, mostly unconsciously, or sometimes consciously separating myself from my humanity. Is that making sense?
Yes.
And there's so many issues that we can pick. You know, there's unresolved political, social, cultural issues that just bombard us every day. And we are all carrying the unresolved issues of our ancestors as well, which has brought forth and created the world that we see around us, because that's the law. That's how it works, isn't it?
Yes.
So it seems it might be important to become adept at bringing all of that stuff into the light and being able to talk about it, to have some real dialogue about it. If we truly embrace our philosophy, then we know that there is only one life. That life is spirit, that life is perfect, and that is the life that we all share right now. We have to change some of our languaging from the I to the we. We all share that. Becoming adept as a community means having a critical mass of the community willing to develop the competencies, the skill sets, the expanded consciousness to be able to reach out into the community. It requires a different way to think, a different way to act, and a different way to live, and a deeper commitment to one another. Ernest Holmes says this: "A change of consciousness does not come by simply willing or wishing. It is not easy to hold the mental attention to an ideal while the human experience is discordant, but it is possible. Knowing the truth is not a process of self-hypnosis, but one of gradual unfoldment of the inner self." What is this gradual unfoldment of the inner self? What does that mean? Well, for one, it requires a greater vulnerability, which requires a safe place. Can we be vulnerable with each other in a safe space? And I'm going to talk a little bit more about safe space in my workshop today, but safe space doesn't necessarily mean that it is comfortable. Imagine that. Can we be safe with being uncomfortable? Here's part of the problem. Human evolution has brought us incredible gifts of intellectual tools for problem solving, goal setting, strategic planning. We take great pride in all of those things, right? And we've become so reliant on and infatuated by our intellect and our ability to figure things out. My son is a rocket scientist, and his head is filled with more knowledge than I can even imagine. And yet, the workplace that he has is borderline toxic because rational logic is the highest level of human attainment in that culture. And yet they can't even work together. Or the working together makes them crazy, anxious, all of these things. You know, my heart goes out to him, and I'm proud of him because he does mirror the loving kindness of this beautiful woman. And that makes a big impact on what he brings to work. It's difficult for him, but he is moving through it. And we have a wonderful relationship to be able to talk about the emotional and intelligence that he has residing within him to try and work his way through that toxic culture. You know, we look at the social media has a zillion verifiable facts that, you know, we throw around and say that this is really what we need to know. And yet how often do our conversations collide when one side has such a passionate rhetoric and is pointing to the irrational person across from them, and that person is talking back to them with all their rationality? There's no way that we can figure this out rationally. It requires us to go deeper. Something deeper is calling us to be together as a community and for all the world to evolve a different way of being together. It can't be solved rationally. It's going to take a greater number of people than ever before to commit to developing emotional, mental, spiritual intelligence. These are things that we haven't taught in our centers before, and yet they're critical for us to evolve to the next level of consciousness. Whatever that looks like, we don't even know what it looks like. But it isn't what we're experiencing now. It's something very different, and it's going to take a big commitment. Again, Ernest Holmes in Love and Law says this: people who expect to demonstrate this principle must be very constant, very determined, very positive, very sure, and faithful with themselves, patient with themselves, long-suffering with themselves. You will rise and you will fall. You will get discouraged. You will become encouraged, but always you will be progressing. So there are multiple intelligences that we need to develop and to apply them to all sorts of social issues and cultural problems and all of that, endless opportunities. So where do we start? Well, I'd like to suggest something that we think we know a lot about, and that is love. Okay, how do we deal with love in a different way? And this came to me to a very fine point for me recently. I was reading a quote by Thomas Merton, and this is what he says: the beginning of love is the will to let those we love to be perfectly themselves. The beginning of love is the will to let those we love to be perfectly themselves. And he continues, the beginning of love is to let those who love be perfectly themselves, the resolution not to twist them to fit our own image. If in loving them we do not love what they are, but only their potential likeness to ourselves, then we do not love them. We only love the reflection of ourselves we find in them. That hit me real hard. Because can I do that? Even with the ones that are closest to me, my spouse, my children, my family, friends, how often, with the best of intentions, Do my expectations get in the way? My judgments get in the way? I invite you to look around the room. Can we just have the will to do that? Just for this one thing, love. Look at the person next to you. Do you have the will to let them be themselves, to be perfectly themselves? Now I know everybody's shaking their head, yeah, yeah, yeah. It may be easy to say yes to that question, especially after this wonderful service, the music. We've established some heart coherence. But what about when you leave here today, when your significant other wants to do some errands and you just want to go home and have lunch? Can you let them be perfectly themselves? Do we have the competency to let them be perfectly themselves? Especially when there's a difference in our expectations. What develops that competency? Well, there's a direct correlation between our willingness to develop a deep emotional and spiritual maturity. Do we have the willingness? You know, very often I remember teaching spiritual mind treatment, and people would seem to get stuck. And I said, okay, do you have the willingness to believe? Maybe you don't believe, but do you have the willingness to believe? Because that's a huge step, is to be open to say, yes, I have the willingness to think differently about my life. Because until the willingness is there, it's just words, right? So we have to have the willingness. Because if we're to solve the problems, it's going to defy a rational fix. We can't just fix things anymore by using our intellect. It requires that heart coherence. It requires something much deeper. We want to learn to be curious rather than right. That's a big, hard one for me anyway. Because we like to be right. Can we just stop ourselves and let ourselves be curious about what the dynamic is between us? Can we learn to surrender to that implicate order that informs life with compassionate wisdom that up until now has been strangled by our intellect? We think we can figure it out. And I'm not saying that strategic planning isn't important or goal setting or any of that stuff, but that isn't the first place we go. You know, this entire culture has this sense of insufficiency, that if we just do another fundraiser or get more butts in the chairs, we'll fix everything. And I'm here to tell you, that's not the starting point. Why do we feel that we're not enough? Why do we feel there's not enough? We've been told in this teaching that there's an infinite intelligence moving through us that simply wants to express itself fully in, as, and through each of us. So why did we tell God that we have to have a fundraiser to fix it? It's a curious thing. We want to learn to relax the necessity to predict and control anything and be at ease with uncertainty. Because the ship is always going to hit the sand. And we must be equipped and competent to be with each other differently. As Bruce Lee famously said, under duress, we do not rise to our expectations, but fall to the level of our training, which means practice, practice, practice. Mental, emotional, spiritual fitness is required by everyone. So do we have the will to let those we love be perfectly themselves? Now, this is not a new idea. It's been taught for thousands of years. In the Bible, and I'm not a big Bible person, but here it is. Matthew tells us the story of the Pharisees. The Pharisees were, many of them were lawyers, and they were masters of rational thinking. And they were trying to trick Jesus into blaspheming the law. So they said, "Master, what is the greatest law?" And you probably all have heard this before. To love the Lord your God with your whole heart, soul, and mind, and secondly, to love your neighbor as yourself. That was 2,000 years ago as a spiritual practice. And how are we doing with that? In actuality, we're doing much better. Despite all the appearances, this is the most peaceful time in humanity's history. Hard to believe, but it is. But here's something that's really, for me, very special. As a religious scientist, the next verse excites me because Matthew continues and says, the entirety of the law hangs on these two. Love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself. The entirety of the law, that means the creative process is incomplete unless we come from that place of love, of establishing that heart coherence with whatever it is that we wish to manifest. That's the place to go first. I wasn't taught that. I was taught about parking spaces and getting a better job or healing something, or I wasn't taught that the entirety of the law of the creative process hangs on loving the Lord your God and loving your neighbor as yourself. The divine incarnation of who we are and loving the other as deeply, qualitatively impacts the evolution of consciousness. We must fan the flame in our hearts for the God in all creation, building our commitment and passion for our own evolution and the evolution of all life. And it has to be passionate. It has to be a flame, like people that argue their political position. It's like their hair is on fire, right? Ramakrishna says this, do not seek illumination unless you seek it as a person whose hair is on fire seeks a pond. That's a warning to you. You're here. You've got to fan that flame in your heart for the God in all creation if you want change. Otherwise, you really got nothing to say. So are we capable of that level of passion? You know, it's really a choice. We need each other now, not tomorrow, but now, to thrive physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And maybe we think we're not up for that. Maybe we think we can't do it. We can't be in this community and serve because we don't know enough about the philosophy. And what I've discovered is that despite feeling that insufficiency or that perceived brokenness, serving, more likely than not, begins to mend our broken hearts. The question that we all must ask in our CSL communities is, do we have the willingness to make changes that are calling us? Healing the ancestral body while embracing an uncertain future. Can we do that kind of work? Maybe we need to adopt an evolutionary purpose statement, transforming lives and inspiring people to make a positive difference in the world. Transforming lives and inspiring people to make a positive difference in the world. It means being driven personally and as a community by awakening to the unresolved cognitive dissonance in our life. You know what cognitive dissonance is? It's also known as spiritual bypass. It's all good, it's all God, you know, or saying I'm rich and not having anything in your pocket. That's cognitive dissonance, that's spiritual bypass. To be able to say, in our community, I need help. I need help. And to know you're in a safe place where people are willing to hear you, not tell you what to do, but hear you. Because discomfort opens the door to enlightenment. Discomfort is the place of discovery. Discomfort, when we are vulnerable together, creates an opportunity for innovation, new way of looking at things, possibility thinking. But as long as we're trying to figure it out, it's not going to happen. Now, I know that this path is not for the faint-hearted, But passionate disciples of this philosophy and the creative process, you've always known this. It's not easy, but it's necessary. It's what is required. My own heart song is that I am here to bring heart-centered authenticity, courage, and creative intelligence as an inspirational resource so that individuals and communities can fulfill their purpose. And I ask you, what is your heart song? What is your playlist? Because this is the place to sing it out. This is the place that needs to hear from you, to know what you know, feel what you're feeling, express what is burning in your heart to be expressed. And this is the place that can support that. Allow the song of your heart to resonate with those that you love, knowing that the beginning of love is the will to let those you love be perfectly themselves. And so it is.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you happen to be in the Portland, Oregon area, we'd love to have you visit in person. The Portland Center for Spiritual Living is located at 6211 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Our inspirational service is at 11 a.m. every Sunday. We also have many programs, classes, and workshops developed just for our online audience. To find out more, go to our website at cslportland.org and look under the online tab. We have a variety of content dedicated specifically for our podcast listeners. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its podcasts, you can donate online at cslportland.org/donate. Our website is also the place to learn more about what's going on at the center or to contact us. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are in your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living.